Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Hey, it's Christmas time. Merry Christmas. We can say that. We can say that because we have freedom of speech. And we have freedom of speech because Republic Broadcasting, they protect our freedom of speech. That it's our last, one of our last bastions of freedom of speech. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send a Christmas present to republicbroadcasting.org. And while you're at it, go to nationalbugle.com, download the Koshertified app. Let's have a non-kosher certified Christmas. How about that? Great stocking stuffer. Today is Monday, and Monday is Mark Collette's day, especially the Monday right after the British election. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hello. It is great to be here, and yes, it is the Monday after a general election.
And isn't it great to live in a country that's now been liberated by Boris Johnson? That must be such a wonderful feeling.
Well, I'm not... if you want me to give the short analysis, this is the short analysis of the election. The short analysis. The bad news is, Boris Johnson and the Conservatives won. The good news... Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party didn't win. that's the sort of up and down of it all, really. Boris Johnson is no saviour. He's no hero of the people. He's no crusader for the British people. Boris Johnson is going to be a huge bust. But I don't think he's as much of a bust as Jeremy Corbyn would have been. And since Boris has got elected, he's done two things, or started talking about doing two things, one of which will be very good, if he does it, and it's a huge if, and one of which is exactly the kind of thing that you knew he would do, but you didn't think he would do it this quickly. So he's already sort of showing his true colours, but also throwing in the odd surprise as well. But I think the real surprise, or the real thing you might want to talk about first, is just how badly the election went for Labour. Mm. Just how disastrous the election was for Jeremy Corbyn.
Why was it so disastrous? Because I hear that this is their worst electoral showing since the 1930s. What was it about Jeremy Corbyn? What explains this disastrous election result?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn actually had some policies that would probably do quite well in traditional working class communities. He wanted to reprivatise a lot of the formerly nationalised industries.
You mean renationalise?
Yes. Did I say privatise?
Yes. Renationalise.
Sorry. He wanted to renationalise
some of these industries that Margaret Thatcher had wound up privatising. They had been nationalised after
the war.
Sorry
about that. Yes, he wanted to renationalise some of the industries that Thatcher had privatised. He also wanted to enshrine the NHS and ensure that the NHS would never be sold off. And I think those would probably be very, very popular policies amongst white working class communities. You've got to remember, white working class communities have always traditionally been red. They've always traditionally been Labour. But at this election, you actually saw something incredible happen. You saw constituencies that had been Labour since their inception, since they were founded some sort of 70 years ago, some of these constituencies were first created. And they've been Labour since then. And for the first time in the history of the UK, or in the history of that constituency, these constituencies voted Conservative. And this was something massive. It was something huge. It was a political earthquake, really.
It does reflect something, you know, it reflects kind of the Trump election in 2016, where you were getting these, you know, working class labor districts that in states were voting for Trump that hadn't voted Republican in a number of elections.
Exactly. It does reflect that. It really does. And I think what you're looking at here is a situation where these constituencies went blue. They went Conservative for one reason and one reason alone. And that is because Boris Johnson came over as a very affable, a very down-to-earth guy, the kind of guy you could imagine going to the pub with, the kind of guy that you could imagine going down the pub with, having a pint and talking about things like Brexit. And when it came down to it, Boris Johnson wanted, or came over as if he did want, Brexit to take place. Now, the interesting thing about that is Brexit wasn't happening. Now, you're thinking, well, what do you mean Brexit wasn't happening? Well, Brexit had been sort of put on the back burner, had been put on hold, it had been repeatedly held up. Now, most of these working class communities had voted overwhelmingly to leave, and Jeremy Corbyn hadn't backed that. He hadn't been clear on that. Because, ironically, the moderates in his party, the sort of moderate, not-so-left-wing, sort of more Blairite wing of the party, had been very clear in that they wanted to block Brexit. They wanted to prevent Brexit from actually happening. And because of this, Corbyn kind of floundered on that issue. Now, he also did other things which were completely crazy. And when I say completely crazy, I mean, he'd come out and said things like, he announced his pronouns publicly. Now, that isn't going to go down well in any way in working class communities. Working class communities aren't going to take kindly to a man or warm to a man that's talking about his pronouns and that he wants to be called he or him. You know, that's not going to go down well with the sons of miners and, you know, the sons of steel workers. It's just not happening. That went down very badly. Whereas Boris, he doesn't stand really for any of the things you would think Boris Johnson would stand for. He, in fact, is very much a globalist. He's very much somebody who stands for all of the things that you would not want. As I say, he's a globalist, he's pro-mass immigration, he's pro-LGBT.
And can I ask a question here? So, you know, he's not the child of, you know, 5th or 10th generation Welsh coal miners, right? He's somebody who's got, he's like a Turkish great-grandparent and a Russian great-grandparent and a Jewish great, like, he's very cosmopolitan in his genetics, isn't he?
He is. And this is the big issue here. The big issue with Boris Johnson is that because he's so affable, because he puts things in a nice way, it basically makes you look at him and think, you know what? Normal people vote for him. And they did. Normal people voted for him. And the Labour Party shifted to a very public position of sort of, for want of a better word, SJW politics. They embraced cultural Marxism on a industrial scale. They had a BAME manifesto. That's a Black Asian Minority Ethnic Manifesto. Now, something like that is not going to go down well.
And what was the contents of that manifesto? Did you look into it?
It was just all about how to please those people, to listen to them more, to increase their, how can you say it, representation. Now, when you're talking to people in working class communities, that isn't what they want. Working class people are not interested in that kind of thing. Working class communities really are going to be turned off by that kind of policy. And it's very, very interesting that Corbyn, as I said, he did two things that were wrong. Firstly, he appealed to the sort of globalist Blairite moderates within the party. And he went with them on the issue of Brexit. So most of these working class communities were overwhelmingly for Brexit, yet he didn't back Brexit. And on the other hand, he went with the complete SJW cultural Marxist side of the party when it came to the LGB stuff, when it came to open borders for immigration, when it came to black, Asian, minority ethnic manifestos. And because of that, he sort of went the wrong way on everything. And although he did have a couple of good policies, and those couple of good policies generally related to rolling back the things that Margaret Thatcher did, which would be very, very popular in working class communities, they weren't good enough.
And how about, because, you know, he wound up with this reputation as being an anti-Zionist. Had he been installed as prime minister, would there really have been much of a change in relations with Israel? I mean, were the hopes that some people had in him and the fears that many of our, you know, tribal brethren, if you want to call them that, were their fears at all justified?
No, I mean, I don't think normal people cared about that. If you went to normal people on the street and said, look, did you know Jeremy Corbyn's an anti-Semite or he's an anti-Zionist?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone...
So normal people wouldn't care about it, but my question is really, had he been elected, whether or not normal people care, would there have been... Do you think there really would have been a change in the way UK relates to Israel or the rest of the Zio-dominated world?
I think there would have been a lot less kowtowing to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've explained this before. The issue you have here with Jeremy Corbyn is Jeremy Corbyn was very much against Zionism. He was very critical of the state of Israel. But all of his large backers in the Labour Party were Jews. Just not Zionist Jews. Mm-hmm. They were hardcore Trotskyite Marxists.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't anti-Jewish. He just wanted to completely side with the Marxist side of the coin. He's got no time for the Zionist side. He's got no time for an ethno-state in the Middle East. He doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. That's not where his bread is buttered. His bread is buttered with the Marxist side of the coin, the cultural Marxists, the Frankfurt School, the Trotskyites. And he was a very curious blend of old school Trotskyism with modern cultural Marxism. And he was totally on board with Jews who push that. And he wasn't anti-Jewish at all. He was just anti-Zionist. And that's a huge difference. And it's very important to point that out. Because the way the press spun the whole Corbyn versus Johnson narrative was that Johnson was going to be this guy who was for the Jewish people. And Jeremy Corbyn was going to be this hugely anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish hate monger. And that just isn't true. It just wasn't true at all. It was just a complete nonsense. That was something that was basically drummed up by the press to sort of say to Jews who are overwhelming, and you see the Jewish diaspora now is overwhelmingly pro-Israel. The battle between whether the Jewish diaspora should support Israel and become Zionists or go down the route of supporting hardcore Marxism and fly the red flag, that debate is well and truly over. That debate was on in the 1960s because Marxism was doing very well. You know, you had the Soviet bloc, you obviously had Red China, you had, you know, all sorts of goings on in, you know, East Asia, you had what was going on in Cambodia, what was about to happen in Vietnam, and also you had communist revolutions all over South America. So, you know, the battle for, you know, which side of the shekel to support was well and truly on, but that's over now. You know, communism has largely been defeated in the sense of old school, you know, Marxist blocs, and now the side of the coin that people favour is the Zionist side, you know, globo homo, capitalism, and there's also a touch of cultural Marxism thrown in there for good measure from these people. But Jeremy Corbyn was sort of
supporting that old school Marxism. But he wasn't anti-Jewish. He was not anti-Jewish. And that can be evidenced by the fact that the Momentum group that captured the Labour Party, it's called Momentum, three of the four founders of Momentum, in fact, the founding member, the guy who runs it, John Landsman, he's Jewish. Two of the other four are definitely Jewish, and one of them I've been informed is, but I can't find proof on that. So essentially what you have there is a very, very Jewish-dominated Marxist organisation that chose Corbyn as their frontman, as their front runner. And that always has to be remembered. And I've just got to, I can't stress enough that nationalists, the other side of the pond, nationalists in America or nationalists outside of Britain, full stop, must, you know, read between the lines on this, because I think a lot of people were swept away with this idea that Jeremy Corbyn could be our guy, and he was going to be a guy that potentially spoke out against, you know, Jewish power. But that's just not the case. That is not what he was doing, and that's not where his bread was buttered.
Wow. Okay, well, we have just a couple minutes before the end of the election, before the break. Jeremy Corbyn is going to step down. Now sometimes the leader of the losing party will step down immediately. I think Ed Miliband stepped down immediately, and you had an interim leader, a woman who was the interim leader of the Labour Party for a couple of months until Corbyn was finally selected. But Corbyn wants to stay on. I don't know if that's controversial, and I don't know... you know, who's likely to take his place? Is there anything interesting you can tell us about that?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn isn't staying on as leader. That's the first thing. He's not staying on as leader of the party. He doesn't want to stay on as leader. What he wants to do is stay on until, and this is very important, he wants to stay on until a new leader is chosen. He wants to help, in his words, the conversation on his successor. Now, the party is descending, the Labour Party, that is descending into a civil war of sorts. So you have, on one hand, the Blairites, the more sort of neocon side of the Labour Party, the old Tony Blair supporters, led by a guy called Keir Starmer.
Which, in charge of the Labour Party from, what, 19... Well, Blair, I guess, as leader of the opposition, came on, what, 1992 or something? And then would you...
Blair was elected, I believe, the first time in 1997.
He became prime minister, I think, in 1997.
But
he had been leader of the opposition for a little while, at least.
And yes, then,
would
he you, was.
And would Gordon Brown be that same wing of the party, I take it?
Yes. Yeah. So they're all part of what's called Blairite Labour, or New Labour. And Corbyn... And they are represented in the party now by a guy called Keir Starmer, who is trying to wrestle control from the Corbynites. Now,
okay,
the front runner from the Corbynites is a girl, or a lady, should I say, she's not a girl, called Rebecca Long Bailey, and she's a hardcore Corbynite. She is in the Corbyn camp. And basically, that is where the battle is going to take place between the Blairites and the Corbynites. Now, I believe that there is no way the Corbynites can lose, because the Corbynites have flooded the party with hardcore leftists, LGBT crusaders, multiple other minority groups that they pander to. And because the party membership gets to vote on the candidate that goes forward to be the leader of the party, because they dropped the membership down to, I think it was about £3 a year party membership, their party membership exploded with far leftists. So Rebecca Long Bailey is likely to win. The Corbynites will remain in control of the party, and that's why he stayed on to facilitate that.
Okay. All right. So he's trying to go out but be kingmaker as he leaves. All right. Well, we'll be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the show. So, this is a British election recap. Now, the big issue, of course, was Brexit. And I know we've talked about Brexit on this show from time to time when we have you on. Brexit will go forward now, but is it Brexit in name only?
Well, it's actually, yes, it is. Yes, in short, yes, it is. It is Brexit in name only. And, in fact, it might actually be a little worse than Brexit in name only. And what do I mean by that? Well, at the time that Brexit took place and Theresa May took over from David Cameron, Theresa May, I almost called her there. Bloody hell, that's a slip and a half, isn't it? Probably not too far off the mark.
Theresa Maylay?
Theresa Mayle is what I was about to call her. That's like one of those slips where you accidentally... anyway, let's move on. Moving on rapidly. Theresa May came up with a deal, which at the time I said was more of a capitulation than it was a deal. It was disastrous. It wasn't a deal. She was handing everything on a plate to Brussels. And at the time, Boris Johnson was being very, very forthright in his sort of condemnation of Theresa May. And he was saying, oh, you know, this is no good, we need a better deal. And obviously he was saying this because he was teeing himself up to be the next Prime Minister. And it was all a little bit of smoke and mirrors, a little bit of clever politics. And he was very good at making all the right noises. Now, since he's been Prime Minister, everyone's been calling it Boris's deal. And now it's Boris's deal. It's not the disastrous Theresa May. It's Boris's deal. But Boris's deal is actually more or less identical to Theresa May's deal. It's basically like putting lipstick on a pig, basically. It's no different. It's still a complete state. It's just been dressed up to be more appealing to the people. And this is what I was saying earlier about Boris. Boris's strength is that he's affable. He has a way of selling things to people. He looks like the guy that you'd go for a pint with. You know, you could imagine having a chat to him on the doorstep. And, you know, he's a bit of a laugh. He's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit, you know, they call him Boris the buffoon. And he puts this on because it makes him likable. It makes people warm to him. And that's why he's the first Tory in 70 years, or in the history of some constituencies, that's managed to win over the people. But the problem is, when you look at what he's saying, it's not good at all. So, for example, Jeremy Corbyn would be very honest and say that he wanted open-door immigration. He wanted immigrants pouring in, and he didn't want any checks or balances. He just wanted to let them all in. Now, that obviously sounds horrendous, because it is. But Boris Johnson would say, oh, no, 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 that's terrible. We're not going to set an upper limit on immigration. What? So is limitless immigration? Well, it's limitless, but with an Australian-style point system. Okay, so...
And what doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're letting in a lot of Australians.
No, it means that Boris is going to set a system of points, and people to come in legally will have to meet a number of criteria to gain points to allow themselves to reach a threshold, which will mean they'll be allowed in. And but
I just want to say, last time I was in Australia, which was just a few years ago, going around Sydney, going around Melbourne or Brisbane, my companion was saying, where are all the white people?
Well, exactly. And this is what I mean. Now, it's almost like saying, look, you can come in to our all-you-can-eat buffet, but the restaurant says, you can eat all you want from our special buffet menu. Well, you might really like crispy duck in pancakes. You might really like a duck in orange sauce or honey and lemon chicken. But if they're not on the special all-you-can-eat menu, you're pretty much done for. In fact, unless you know what's on the special all-you-can-eat menu, you probably don't want to buy your ticket for the buffet. And in fact, anyone would actually look, wouldn't they? Anyone would ask what's on the menu before they bought their ticket to the buffet. And this is the thing with Boris Johnson. He's telling us there's going to be an Australian points-based system, but he's not explaining it. He's not telling us what points people are going to need. He's not telling us exactly what the restrictions will be. So, as I see it, this Australian points-based system will basically be Boris's way of having unchecked immigration, because he's already said there isn't going to be an upper limit on immigration.
Yeah, and
so as there isn't going to be an upper limit on immigration, you're in a position where Boris can allow as many as he wants in as long as they meet his criteria. But he isn't telling us the criteria. So again, it all sounds very good to the man on the street, but to the discerning sort of viewer or listener, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and it's Boris, again, selling something that we're not exactly sure what he's selling. And that's what his strength has been, marketing himself to people, but the people not really know what they're getting.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
You are my paradise completer.
Oh, lovely Leyland, the air.
Welcome back to the show. So, the Australian points-based system. Now, last week, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember, on your Wednesday discussion show, you had an Australian. What was his name?
Blair Cottrell.
Blair Cottrell. Was he singing the praises of the Australian points-based system? Because, I mean, I seem to remember, first of all, however nice they may be, a lot of Chinese and Vietnamese who might be perfectly nice people, but entire big hunks of Brisbane and Sydney were dominated by these Asians, Southeast Asians or East Asians. You still had kebab shops on every corner, and you in some places like Melbourne is notorious for these gangs of South Sudanese who are very criminal. So, is the Australian, the Australian points-based system, maybe they're getting a somewhat nicer group of people who are replacing them than Britain or America currently, but it's still replacement nonetheless, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, and the issue with Boris, and why everyone should be very, very wary of his Australian points-based system, is the man is an absolute slave to GDP, and because he's a slave to GDP, that means that he will do whatever it takes to raise the GDP so he can call it an economic miracle. He's already talking about giving an amnesty to 500,000 plus illegal immigrants that are already in Britain. Now, is this a man who is going to safeguard us from immigration? Is this a man who is going to keep the ethnic makeup of the UK as it currently is? No, it isn't. He is a man who is pro-migration, He is a man who is pro-amnesty. He is a man that is pro-GDP at any cost, which of course means more immigrants coming here. And he's all of those things, but at the same time, because he talks about Australian points-based systems, because he talks about all kinds of sort of patriotism on the Brexit front and securing the best deal and getting the job done, people have believed in him, and these people are going to be sorely disappointed. But at the same time, he still was a marginally better bet than Jeremy Corbyn, because I believe had Corbyn got in, it would have been a full-on Marxist revolution. You would have seen huge and sweeping changes to British life, including major new laws restricting freedom of speech, and there was also talk of a dedicated investigation into the quote-unquote far right. So neither of these candidates were good. Boris Johnson is going to betray a lot of people, but the good thing about this election is it has broken the voting habits that have been in place for generations. For generations, there's this been this political logjam in British politics where people would always vote Labour or they'd always vote Conservative. And that's finally been broken. And these places which haven't changed hands, these constituencies, sorry, that haven't changed hands since they were created some 70, 80 years ago, have finally changed hands. And that means that people are willing to break with the old parties. They're willing to break with their old allegiances, which means that there is a lot of room in these places now for nationalists to sweep in and take power, to go in there, and when Boris lets the people down, which he will, nationalists can go to those places and say, look, you've already broken with the Labour Party, you know, they don't represent them, and you've learned the hard way that Boris Johnson doesn't represent you either. And I think that that is where we can come in and where we can do an awful lot of good, and where people like, you know, people basically like us can actually reach out to these people now and build a movement for change.
Well, you said something very important, I think needs some underscoring, because you were talking about Boris Johnson being a slave to GDP, and GDP's almost become, or really has become, you know, the used to mean GDP growth. You know, GDP has to grow and grow and grow. And it's hardly just Boris Johnson. This has been the hegemonic doctrine for decades. Not just that economic policy revolves around trying to increase GDP, maximize GDP, but all government policy does. And, you know, when you talk about immigration, what do you hear? Oh, well, we need them for the economy. We need them for the economy. They add, you know, they add to economic growth and this and that. And I don't really talk about it that much. A decade ago or so, when I was, if I was talking to environmentalists, I would talk about this, you know, and frame it in, yeah, think of a forest. Think of a forest in the middle of Borneo. If that rainforest is just sitting there and animals are you know, living, and that's not contributing to GDP. But if you cut it down, you increase GDP. And so this whole fixation on GDP, and because everybody buys into it, it's hegemonic. It's just the paradigm, left and right. They all buy into it. It's just, well, no. What better? What's the better way to increase GDP? Cutting taxes, or you know, investing in this or that. You know, this or that welfare program. And so it's just become hegemonic, and nobody talks about it. And so I'm glad that you're raising this, because, you know, so many people on the so-called right, a lot of them came from normie conservative positions, which, you know, the business lobby, and a lot of them come from, say, libertarianism, which, again, is very, you know, GDP economic-oriented. So this is important. So chasing the ever-increasing GDP, that shouldn't be what government policy is all about, or even government economic policy, right?
Well, exactly. And the thing with GDP, which is very important to remember, and I always say this, but GDP should be seen like a cake. If you have four people sat around the table and you have a cake, okay, and let's say the cake arbitrarily is 100. Everyone gets a piece, and that piece, or the size of that piece, because there's four around the table, is 25. Mm-hmm. Well, if you increase the people around that table, if you take it to 10 people being sat around the table, and the cake grows to 200, you can call it a miracle. You can say, oh, we've got double the size cake. Now the cake's twice as big. Look how much we've got. Yeah, but there's 10 people around the table. Mm-hmm. So everyone's slice of cake is only 20. So the original people sat around the table, well, they may be faced with a larger cake, but they're actually getting a smaller slice. Their share has gone down from 25 to 20. And what's more, the table's now rather crowded. You're all packed in, and it's not really as pleasant mm-hmm. to eat there. So not only have you got a smaller slice of the cake, but you're having less pleasure eating it because you're penned in, you're mm-hmm. boxed in. And this is the big, big, big issue when it comes to GDP. GDP isn't about the quality of life of the individual person or different families. It's not about the quality of life of individual families. GDP is all about the quality of, or not the quality, but the size of the cake. It's about money. It's just about a big figure. And it doesn't take into account quality of life. And Boris Johnson is a worshipper of GDP. Boris Johnson is a man who absolutely wants to talk about GDP and nothing but GDP. And because he thinks like that, because he thinks in that manner, and because he's obsessed with that, he will do anything he can to grow that figure. And every time it grows, he will proclaim another economic miracle. There's been another economic miracle. We've done great things. We're at new heights. GDP's at new levels. Look how well we've done. It's economic growth like we've never seen before. But this economic growth will be at the expense of the indigenous British people. Because not only are we being replaced and displaced by large numbers of low-skilled, often hostile migrants, mm-hmm. but also we are being penned in. We are being exposed to a worse and worse quality of life. You know, there's less spaces in the NHS. It's harder to get a visit at your GPs. It's worse for travelling to work in the morning. All the green spaces are disappearing. There's more problems with the environment. There's a higher level of flooding because all the foliage and tree canopies being destroyed to concrete over to build more houses for these migrants. So it's not just that the migrants are coming here, but the effects the migrants are having and the fact that our lives are getting worse to grow GDP so that Boris Johnson can stand in front of the nation and crow about how great things are. Now, it's very, very important to note in all of this that basically this is being done from the Conservative point of view because of GDP. Now, Boris isn't against our replacement, and he probably mm-hmm. thinks, oh, it's not a big issue. He doesn't care. But he is doing this for economic reasons, where there's Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. They wouldn't have been bringing in migrants for economic reasons. They wouldn't be bringing them in to grow GDP. They'd be bringing them in for one reason primarily and one reason alone, and that is to speed white genocide. And that's the big difference between the two parties. The result's the same, but they're largely doing what they're doing for different reasons. So Boris Johnson, he won. He won because he was affable. He won because he reached out to working class communities. He won because he played the patriot card, because he played the immigration control and Brexit card. And ultimately, he will betray the people. And since he's been elected, he has shown, on one hand, that he's a bit of a wild card and that he can do the odd thing which will be good for the British people. So it was reported on Sunday that he's going to decriminalise non-payment of the BBC licence fee, effectively meaning that if people don't want to pay their television licence, they don't have to. Which means the BBC, which is viciously anti-British and anti-white, may well be struggling and could well be in financial trouble. So on one hand, Boris does have the possibility of throwing out some good curveballs mm-hmm. that may well be very good for the British people. But on the other hand, the news this morning was that Boris Johnson is, and I'll read this directly from the Jerusalem Post, Boris Johnson set to pass anti-BDS law, official says. Anti-Semitism, an attack on the British way. Anti-Semitism, sorry, the headline is wrong. I'm going to insert words here to make it sound correct. Anti-Semitism is an attack on the British way of life and British identity. Without our Jewish citizens, we would be a lesser nation, he said. So the first day after the results were announced, he throws this curveball against the BBC and everyone's like, great. The next day, he calls for basically restrictions on our freedom to organise in order to please the state of Israel and Jews living in Britain who support the state of Israel. So here you see where Boris Johnson's bread's buttered. He is obviously a slave to Zionism, a slave to the state of Israel, whereas Jeremy Corbyn was a slave to the other side of the shekel, the Bolsheviks, the Marxists, whatever you want to call them, the Trotskyite Jews. Whereas Corbyn would have probably thrown out his own curveballs, Boris Johnson's throwing out the anti-BBC curveball, which could be very, very good, because obviously the destruction of the BBC would be good for us. So it's been a very interesting election. And there's probably some other things you want to ask, like what happened to Nigel Farage?
Yeah, well, well that's a good question. There's a couple of things I want to throw in there. Regarding the BBC, you know, in the United States, the Republicans have been calling for the defunding of Planned Parenthood for years, and it's a big, you know, it's really high on their wish list. It's not going to happen. I think it'd be a lot better calling for the defunding of the, you know, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, because our public broadcaster, which isn't as big as BBC, but, you know, it's PBS and NPR, are just horrible, and they're publicly funded. One other thing, I don't know so much about Britain. In the United States, both parties are pro-immigration, and sometimes people will, I think they emphasize the business community and the Chamber of Commerce. They're pro-immigration preferences. I think it gets overemphasized sometimes because, they are pro-immigration, but I think they're really a junior partner. Even on the Republican Party, they're a junior partner. That it's still the tribal friends who want to replace the white majority so that they'll feel more secure and they can never be an ethnically based nationalism to challenge their power. When you look at the individuals on the Republican side, who push immigration the most, these are people, if not tribal themselves, who are very, very closely tied to the tribe, like, you know, Lindsey Graham or John McCain. So Nigel Farage, what's his future in all this? Because his party didn't win a single seat. How did that happen just months after having finished first in the European parliamentary elections?
Well, his party sent out multiple mixed messages. They stood down in many seats. They only ended up standing 273 seats, and that was money wasted. Large numbers of Brexit Party candidates, I don't believe, saved their deposits. They only took 2% of the national vote. Very, very bleak. Not winning a single seat either. Very, very bleak. Nigel Farage is also talking about folding the Brexit Party now, but of course he's not disappearing from politics. He intends to start a new party after that called the Reform Party. And the Reform Party will be a party that calls, obviously, for British electoral reform, calls for proportional representation. So that might be quite good. But I also believe his Reform Party will be a vehicle, firstly, for his ego. And secondly, it will be a party that will prevent real nationalist parties gaining traction. Because what you have to remember is Nigel Farage is often built up before big elections to ensure that more radical parties don't get any traction. And that's something that's very important to remember. Because Nigel, although he has done some good things, he at the same time is very, very much...
He stands up against Polish immigration into Britain, right?
Polish immigration, but he wants more black immigration into Britain. And this is the thing with Nigel Farage. He isn't someone who we could regard as our friend. He isn't somebody who is on our side. He's not somebody who is in any way a racial nationalist. And he also really, really does like to have a good relationship with the media, because he likes publicity, he likes exposure. And because of those things, he is somebody that the media can play and manipulate to a degree. Because if the media say, right, we're willing to give you a lot of publicity, which they did before the Euro election, they built the Brexit Party up out of nowhere, he will play their game, he will toe their line for their publicity, which gives them control over it, which is very unfortunate.
Okay, we will be right back.
Tiny bubble. Make me happy. Eat your hot lunch. Make me feel fine. Tiny bubble. Make me warm.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We are right back. So, we just have a few minutes left, and thank you for all of that information on the British election. And, I'd like to ask you about who's going to be on your show this coming week, and what your video that you do at week's end is going to be about. But one last thing. You know, Britain's not just another country. I think the Anglo world, the Anglosphere, the English speaking world, we do have a lot of connections with each other because we understand each other and we're going through a lot of the same things. And so I think what happens in Britain and what happens in America, we impact each other. And so it is important. It's not just another foreign country, but and you can respond to that. But and then Then what about your shows this week?
I think we do impact one another, and I think there's some real parallels to be seen between Trump and Johnson. Now, Johnson has not been anywhere near as useful as Trump. I'm well off the Trump train now, by the way. I wouldn't say I support Trump now. He's done too many terrible things. He's really betrayed his voter base, and I'm well and truly off the Trump train. But he still served some very important purposes.
I still show sympathy for him. What's on and what's off, I don't know, but I show sympathy for him.
Well,
that's different from support, necessarily.
It's very important to note, he got people talking about immigration, he exposed the deep state, he polarized society, and he did more to damage the mainstream media than any other person post-Second World War. So for that, he has to be thanked. But he's pretty much burnt too many bridges now with genuine patriots.
Yeah, he's on a losing streak, and his, at least this term, is maybe unsalvageable. We'll see.
Yes, definitely. But he did some good things, especially when he was campaigning. Now, the other thing I've got to point out is Boris is not the British Trump. He's really done no good things whatsoever. People compare the two, and people are saying, you know, this is the British Trump moment. But that isn't the case. Boris will go straight into the sort of Zionist-pleasing mode that he's gone into. But at the same time, he hasn't undermined the media in the way Trump has, despite, you know, threatening to defund the BBC, which we'll see if that happens or not. That might be one of those sort of like Trump-style promises that never happens. He hasn't really threatened to get a grip of immigration, and I do believe Donald Trump genuinely wanted to do that at one point. Boris is a real bust. He is somebody that has played off his affable nature and played off very, very carefully marketed, carefully worded statements, none of which will lead to any changes whatsoever. And unlike Donald Trump, who at one point I do believe had genuine intentions, I don't believe Boris's intentions were ever genuine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who's on your show this week?
We have a amazing lady. She's a homeschooling specialist from America, and I am so looking forward to having her on, because it's going to be a bit of a change of pace from what we've been having recently. Real change of pace from the kind of guests we've been having. It's going to be all about homeschooling. It's going to be about her excellent work, and I am really looking forward to speaking to her. So, you know, make sure you're there on Wednesday night, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, and how about the subject of your video this week that you release every Friday?
It's going to be about Netflix and their blasphemy, the fact that they've produced a show at Christmas mocking Jesus and painting him as a homosexual. And I'm basically going to be saying they wouldn't do that to any other prophet or religious leader or religious figurehead. This, again, is another anti-Christian swipe, and guess who's behind it?
I don't know. We'll have to tune in on. Go to your YouTube channel or your BitChute channel and find out. Well, thank you so much for joining me again, Mark.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to being back next week.
And we will have you back next week when we'll have another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.